Today on Family Talk.
And I realized that she was a spiritual giant and I was a spiritual midget, because in circumstances that may have made me feel resentful, like I can't get out of bed, I can't lift my head, I can't even eat gruel, all that she was is she was filled with love, filled with joy, and filled with gratitude. And that's when I understood Mother Teresa's position that every single life is worth saving. Every single life is of infinite value.
And what a life-changing moment for our guest today here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, welcoming you to day two of our conversation with Reggie Littlejohn. Reggie is the founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers. Her ministry works with people around the world to end forced abortion and sexual slavery in China. She is a powerful and dynamic speaker and has spoken in front of the U.S. Congress, the European Parliament, and the British, Irish, and Canadian parliaments as well. She's lectured at prestigious law schools, spoken at the Vatican, and was even prominently featured in a documentary about gendercide in China and India. On the last edition of the program, she explained how China's new two-child policy is actually just as brutal as the former one-child policy. She's back now to continue her powerful conversation with Dr. James Dobson, right here on Family Talk.
Reggie, I love the program we did together yesterday, and I really wish that those who didn't hear that program will go to our archives. You can get it through the app or any number of ways, write for it. But they ought to hear it because it's so significant. The work you're doing is God's work. I'm convinced of that. And you are too, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Absolutely.
You've had quite an interesting life. And I explained about some of the things you have done and are into. But I didn't mention that you spent some time working with Mother Teresa.
Yes, I did, and I was very privileged to spend 6 weeks working with her in Calcutta.
You just knocked on the door?
Yes, I knocked on the door, my husband and I together, and we said we would like to volunteer, and this very sweet nun opened the door and ushered us in, and we sat down, and they were handing us a piece of paper about different places we could volunteer in the city and different places we could live.
Were you in India?
Yeah, oh yes, Calcutta.
Yeah.
And Mother Teresa herself came by and shook our hands, and she took her hands and inside of her hands and said, "Oh, very good, very good. Welcome, welcome." And then she was gone. But within 5 minutes of our arriving in her home, we had already personally met her. And she tried to get me to become a member of her order. So there was a lot there.
I wonder if that experience with Mother Teresa and her team had anything to do with the work you're doing today.
Yes, actually, there's a pretty direct connection, which is that I was working in a home called Shisha Bhavan, which is the home that she established when she found a baby girl in a trash can in Calcutta. And it's filled with little girls, you know, who are abandoned. And one girl was about 3 feet long. She looked like she was about 3 years old. And her spine was twisted like a dish rag. And all of her limbs are going off in all kinds of directions. And her jaw seemed like it was not formed. And I was asked to feed her breakfast. And breakfast was a thin oatmeal, like a gruel. So when I tried to feed her, when she was lying with her head back, this gruel would go out of the corners of her mouth and into her hair. And if I tried to lift her head up, then the gruel would go down her chin and onto her gown. So one of the sisters was passing by, and I said to her, "Could you please help me, tell me how I should feed her, because I don't seem to be able to feed her very well." And the sister said, "No, you're doing great. That's just the way she eats." And
they break your heart?
Yes. And then the sister said, "Why don't you speak to her?" And it had not even occurred to me to speak to her. I didn't really know what to say to her, so I said, "How did you enjoy your breakfast?" And she just broke into this radiant smile, the most beautiful and joyful smile that I have ever seen. And I realized that she was a spiritual giant and I was a spiritual midget, because in circumstances that may have made me feel resentful, like I can't get out of bed, I can't lift my head, I can't even eat gruel, all that she was is she was filled with love, filled with joy, and filled with gratitude. And that's when I understood Mother Teresa's position that every single life is worth saving. Every single life is of infinite value.
I think I told you when we talked in my office that I had the opportunity to hear her speak at a presidential prayer event. That actually, this was during Bill Clinton's era, and Mother Teresa was the primary speaker. And I'll never forget her standing there. I could only see the top of her head because she's a very little woman, and she couldn't see over the podium. We couldn't see her eyes, but we could hear her. And she was speaking to about 2,000 of us in the audience. And I remember so clearly her saying, "They say that nobody wants these babies that are aborted." Bill Clinton was sitting on the platform, and Hillary Clinton on one side, and Al Gore and his wife on the other, Tipper. And she was saying this in front of two people who are identified very much with the pro-choice point of view. But she, and nevertheless, she said it plainly. She said, "I hear that nobody wants these children. I want them. Bring them to me. Let me have them. They have worth." And that 2,000 people in the audience stood to their feet and began cheering and clapping, and many of them were crying. And the president and the vice president and their wives didn't move a muscle. They're the only ones that didn't stand. It was a very awkward moment for our leaders, but the people in that crowd will never forget it. I tell you what, I will never forget it. Because she was out there doing the work. Others talk about it. You saw it firsthand, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And it's a great inspiration to me to save the baby girls of China who are not wanted. And we also have a connection to move into India as well. So we're looking forward to starting to save girls in India.
Are they doing the same thing?
Yes. So in India and China, both of them have son preferences, and in both countries, women are pressured to abort or abandon their baby girls. So what we have is something that we call our Save a Girl campaign, which is that we have boots on the ground in one area of China. We've developed relationships with the local Red Cross hospital, the local clinics. And when a woman comes in and has an ultrasound, sees that she's pregnant with a girl, and then schedules herself for an abortion, they will actually call us and tell us. Also, our network will inform us when a woman has given birth to a girl and is being pressured to abandon her. And also, we find out about families that are so desperately poor that their girls are really at risk. And so what we will do is we will go to the door of these families and we will say, "Don't abort. Don't abandon your baby because she's a girl. She's a precious daughter. And we will give you a monthly stipend for a year to empower you to keep your daughter." And we have saved hundreds of baby girls.
You're providing food and supplies.
We provide money. I mean, and actually, in a couple of families that are so poor that they need food and supplies in addition.
Yeah.
But it's a monthly stipend. Like, we ask people to give $25 a month. About $20 a month gets into the hands of a woman in China. She signs for it. So she's gotten this money. And so what the money does is two things. It provides, you know, material and financial support for her and her daughter. And it also provides sort of backing where she can go to her in-laws. It's usually the in-laws that are pressuring her to abandon the daughter and say, "Look, I can't."
They want a boy.
Right, because they want a boy. And she says, "You know, look, I can't abandon this baby girl. She's a lucky girl. Look at this. She's already bringing money into the family." So we can use the Chinese culture surrounding luck to save these baby girls. And we've saved hundreds of girls this way.
What does abandonment really mean? I mean, we hear that baby girls are found in the edge of fields and by the road and in the most horrible of rejection you can imagine. What does it really mean when you see it?
It can mean a variety of things. The lucky girls actually are placed with an adoptive family, but many, many more girls are simply left out into a field or by a river to die. I mean, this does happen, and that's why China has the situation where they have 37 million more males living than females. And what that's doing, in turn, is driving human trafficking and sexual slavery.
The men can't find a woman to marry.
That's right. They're called bare branches because they will not marry, they will not reproduce, they are at the end of the family line, and it just is a miserable existence for them.
Surely the Chinese government, which is populated by very, very intelligent people, can recognize the social implications of that. Is the ideology so strong and the fear of population explosion from the past still dominating public policy there?
You know, the answer to that question is multifaceted, but I will say this. The Chinese Communist Party is not simply monolithic. I mean, there are a lot of very smart people, I believe, inside of the party who can see that this is a big problem, and I think that's the reason they move from a one-child policy to a two-child policy. But there are also some real hardliners in there, and this is what I believe, Dr. Dobson. In the beginning, I believe that the one-child policy was instituted purely for population control reasons and that the terror that is generated by forced abortion was a byproduct of the policy. Now it makes no sense whatsoever to continue with the policy. Why do they continue it? I believe that terror is now the purpose of the policy. Because the Chinese Communist Party is a brutal...
Oh, it's control.
It's control. It is social control masquerading as population control. Because the one-child policy touches everyone, and as long as they have these rules that you have to obey, and even under the two-child policy, it's only two kids.
If you don't play ball with us, we'll do very unpleasant things to you.
Right, and what it does is it terrorizes people. The family planning police, they function as domestic terrorists. They can get away with anything, and it's a way of keeping the population down through terror. That's my opinion.
You're listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, featuring an interview with activist Reggie Littlejohn. In this two-day broadcast, Reggie has been discussing her fight against China's brutal population control policies. Let's rejoin the conversation now as she tells the story of one remarkable little girl.
At the end of the program last time, we talked about a little girl named Annie. And I'm fascinated to know more about Annie's story.
Okay, so Annie Zhang and her sister Lily are the daughters of Zhang Lin. Zhang Lin is a famous activist in China. He was trained as a nuclear physicist. He's a brilliant man, but he gave up what could have been a life of privilege to demonstrate for democracy. And for that, he's been jailed and tortured repeatedly, horribly tortured. They jumped on his back and broke discs in his back and in his neck, and they jumped on his hands, jumped on his feet. He was a very strong man and ended up in a wheelchair for a time. And when they could not silence him because of his incredible courage by directly persecuting him, they went after his little daughter, Annie. 10 years old, they kidnapped her out of her elementary school and detained her overnight. So she is known as China's youngest prisoner of conscience. And then they would not allow her to go to school. They put her and her father under house arrest, so they could not leave this little apartment for I don't know how long. Then they escaped house arrest and became fugitives. And then they were caught. And when they were caught, Zhang Lin got word out to me saying, "Can you help me get Annie to the United States? She can't lead a normal life in China." And I said, "Yes, I can, or I can try. It's pretty hard. But where will she go?" And Zhang Lin said, "I don't know." And I said, "Let me call my husband." So I called my husband. And he said, "Well, is this the Chinese daughter you've always wanted?" And I said, "Yeah, I think so." And he said, "Okay."
To quote Mother Teresa, "They say they don't want her, and you're saying,
I want her.
Bring her to me.
Bring her to me. I want her. I want her." And so with the help of Congressman Chris Smith and Cheng Guanchen, another very famous activist, and very brave people in China, several of whom were detained, and Jing Zhang, another close friend of mine, we were able to get Annie from China to the United States with her sister, and we have been raising them both as our daughters.
You told us earlier that you'd had a couple of miscarriages, so these are the children you couldn't have, in essence. You now have a son who was born before, and obviously two little girls now.
That's right, and that's the way that God has blessed me. I tried to follow what he was calling me to do, and he gave me these two beautiful Chinese daughters, knowing the pain that I had suffered through the two miscarriages.
And the Lord did the same thing for us, because we had a child born to Shirley, and then found out that Shirley went into premature menopause and couldn't have any more children. And the Lord gave us Ryan. And it's a similar situation, only we didn't smuggle him out of China or something. Now, they are now 14.
And 22.
And 22.
So the older one is doing great. She's her own apartment. She bought herself a car. She's doing real estate. She's taking accounting classes at night. And this is all just three years from coming from China. So she's a rock star in terms of becoming independent on a very short period of time.
Annie couldn't speak English when she came. She's 10 years old.
Right. So we had a rule that she had to learn 100 words a day in our household. And that's a lot of words, but Annie is very smart. So she was able to do that. And within 1 year, she became a top student. And we also started her on piano lessons. She didn't play piano when she got to the United States. And we just got her piano lessons from a Mandarin-speaking teacher named Matt Long. Mm-hmm. And within 2 years, she had won an international competition to play in Carnegie Hall, and she performed in Carnegie Hall just before Christmas.
What an incredible story. You actually got her into piano because you felt that was going to take the place for the fact that she really couldn't go to a school setting because she didn't speak any English.
Well, she was able to go to school, but she didn't understand any. She couldn't do any of the work. Music is a universal language, and she could play the piano as a way to just have an outlet while she was learning English, and boy, did she take off. I mean, she's incredibly talented.
Well, she has to be, and unbelievably, she competed in Carnegie Hall. That just takes my breath away, and we have a recording of her competition. What number did she play?
She played Chopin Etude Opus 10, number 5.
Reggie, we don't have cameras in the studio here so people can't see it, but I have tears in my eyes. That touches my heart. I mean, that little girl was scheduled for death.
She was. Something that Annie has given me permission to talk about is the fact that when her mother was pregnant with her, she was Zhang Lin's second daughter. So the family planning police were after her mother to forcibly board her. She was like 6 months pregnant. And they were coming daily, over and over again, to try to drag her out for an abortion. And her mother actually was so distressed by this that she actually contemplated suicide. And the only reason that Annie was not forcibly aborted is that Zhang Lin was able to argue that even though it was his second daughter, it was his wife's first daughter, but more importantly, he was already a famous activist, so he was blogging internationally about what was happening to his family, so the family planning police backed off and allowed Annie to be born.
So the word got out to the Western world.
Exactly, and that's how the Western world can help. You know, China says they don't care about what people think in the West. It's not true. And that's a big part of what Women's Rights Without Frontiers does, is hold up what they're doing to the world so that condemnation will come on them and cause them to change.
And you know who else is paying attention here? The Lord cares about this. You find in Proverbs 31:8, let me read it. This is from the New International Version. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. It's pretty clear about how the Lord feels about that. You shared with me a similar verse in Proverbs that I think says it even better.
Yes, this is one that was the main scripture that was burning in my heart when I was sick and when the Lord was turning me away from being a lawyer to using all the skills I had as a lawyer to rescue the women and babies of China. And here is this other scripture from Proverbs. Rescue those being led away to death. Hold back those staggering towards slaughter. If you say, but we knew nothing about this, does not he who weighs the heart perceive it? Does not he who guards your life know it? Will he not repay everyone according to what they have done?
That scripture makes it clear we're held accountable for the pain and the sorrow and the death, the murder of others, especially children. He cares passionately about little children. Jesus made that clear.
Well, that's right. And people sometimes ask me, you know, why are you focusing on China? Don't you care about the United States? Yes, I care about the United States. But you know what? People in China can't talk about this. What I have said in these two programs is just about 100% state secrets in China, and I would immediately get detained. And anyone who tries to talk about these things in China does get detained. And God cares about the whole world, not just about the United States. And so I feel accountable because I know what's happening in China to say something about it, because these people cannot speak for themselves. And also, just so that people understand the scope of the problem here, in the United States, we've had about 58 million abortions since the Roe v. Wade decision. In contrast, China, they boast that they have prevented 400 million lives through the one-child policy.
They're proud of that.
Yes. In fact, they even bragged at the Copenhagen Climate Summit that this was their contribution to the fight against global warming, the elimination of 400 million lives. And that number, 400 million, is greater than the entire population of the United States and Canada combined.
It's not only that babies are killed through abortions, it's sterilization, forced sterilization.
That's another way that they've prevented lives. They have performed hundreds of millions of violent forced sterilizations, like the one that happened to my original asylum client. So because of the numbers involved, this is the greatest life issue, the greatest human rights issue in the world today. China's one-child policy has caused more violence against women and girls than any other official policy on Earth and any other official policy in the history of the world.
So to our listeners, when you hear the media and the feminist movement and many people in government talk about women's rights around the world, and we all should be concerned about that. I don't take anything away from that. Don't forget the women of China and India and other places in the world where innocent little babies are being killed and their mothers are being abused in the most horrible way. Don't forget them. That would be your message to the world, wouldn't it?
That's right. Always remember in prayer the women and the babies of China and India. You know, don't believe the reports that coercive enforcement of the one-child policy is over. Yes, we have a two-child policy, but forced abortion and the sex-selective abortion of baby girls continues, and these women and these girls really need our prayers and our help.
Are you going to continue this fight, Reggie?
I'm absolutely going to continue this fight.
Because it's in your soul, isn't it?
It is. It's something that the Lord gave me.
And how's Annie doing today?
Annie is just blossoming like a beautiful flower, and she is a straight-A student. She is a rock star as far as playing the piano is concerned, and she is an example of all the love and all the joy and all the intelligence and all the beauty that are being lost every day in China through forced abortion and the sex-selective abortion of baby girls. But we are just delighted that Annie made it through and that she's now our daughter.
Well, these last two programs have gone by so very, very quickly because the content is so captivating and so important and, frankly, very disturbing. Our guest has been Reggie Littlejohn, who is the founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers. And her ministry works with people really around the world to end forced abortion and sexual slavery in China. Reggie, it's a pleasure having you here. I heard you speak spontaneously at a conference, and I came up to you and said, you've got to tell this on our program. And you handed me a little card with your name on it and the name of your organization on it. And the suit I'm wearing today, I have not worn since that conference just because I haven't worn it. And when I saw you, I reached in my pocket and there was the card that you gave me. I appreciate what you do, and may God continue to be with you as you rescue those who are being led away to death. Thank you, and God be with you.
God be with you too, Dr. Dobson.
And what a great reminder of God's command to stand up for the vulnerable. You've been listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and if Reggie Littlejohn's story has motivated you to do more for the babies of China or to help her take the fight to India as well. You can visit her website, womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. Her Save a Girl campaign is a great way to support babies who might otherwise be abandoned or even aborted. We have a link to her website on our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. And if you want to hear this two-day broadcast once again, you can always download it from our website. You can also listen to it on our Facebook page and then join the conversation there about this topic. You'll find us at facebook.com/drjamesdobson. And while you're online, would you please consider how you can support the work of Family Talk financially? Your donations make it possible for us to bring you eye-opening broadcasts like this one each and every day. You can donate securely online at drjamesdobson.org, or you can also give a gift over the telephone, 877-732-6825. Thank you for standing with us with your prayers and your financial contributions. And be sure to come back again next time for another encouraging edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.